This is Amarins.
Hi, everybody. This is Arthur, and welcome to episode 12 of my podcast. This week's theme is moving on, because I'm going to start by talking a bit about where we're at in our grieving process for Scythe, and then I want to start getting the podcast back on track by talking about something else. In this case, what a parliamentary system means, because Tony Blair's impending departure as Prime Minister of Great Britain is sort of a starting point, because he, of course, is getting ready to move on himself. Then I'll talk about comments again, of course, and also at the very end, I have an appeal that I'd like you to think about. So the first thing to say is that we're both doing much better. This week has had its ups and downs, of course. Monday and Tuesday were particularly difficult for me because I was home alone. On Wednesday and Thursday, I had the part-time job, and although I hate to admit it, it was probably a good thing, because it got me out of the house and kept me occupied and those sorts of things. Today, I went out to do my Friday errands, and on the way back home, I stopped in at the vet to pick up Scythe's ashes. Today is Friday, May 25th, and it's exactly 1 week since Scythe died, so it's exactly 1 week since I was up there as well. And that was a bit difficult. It was, I don't know, it made me feel very sad all of a sudden when I held her ashes. And if you've never done that, they're in a much smaller box than you'd expect, but a very heavy box. So I got out to the car and I started crying, and did a few times more on the drive home. I drove carefully, of course, and brought them home and set them out, and immediately set about trying to get myself organized with other projects I had to get done today so that I would, again, distract myself from the immediacy of it. And I knew that what I needed today was what I needed all week, which was sort of a break and some time so that I could kind of, I don't know, reorient my thinking and what have you. But this week has been, this whole process actually, has been made much better by the enormous amount of support that we've gotten from family and friends, and also from all my new friends through blogging and podcasting. And it's really helped immensely. But it's gotten me to thinking. And I think that maybe those of us who have companion animals or have had them, maybe we're a bit browbeaten, for lack of a better word, intimidated maybe by people who don't feel that way about animals and who think it's all silly and all those sorts of things. I mean, I've worked in a number of fairly large organizations, and I know that in the past I've kept quiet about a pet that I've lost because I don't want people to make fun of me, and I don't want people saying stupid things that are going to hurt me even more. But, you know, it's a fairly widespread feeling for people who have companion animals. They feel them as a member of their family because they are a member of their family. And I'm beginning to think that maybe all of us should just be a little bit more, stand up a little bit straighter and, for lack of a better word, and say back to these people, hey, hang on a minute, that's not appropriate. I know that in future, if I'm around somebody who's grieving for the loss of a companion animal and somebody starts making fun of them, I'm going to stick up for them because, you know, they shouldn't have to go through that sort of thing. But I don't know, it's sort of an immediate thought that's come to me through this whole process. And certainly something that I haven't thought of before. There was a little interesting, well, not interesting isn't quite the right word, little sidelight that came out this week. Next door neighbor stopped by on Wednesday, I think it was, to say that her dog had been attacked by a dog. Her cat had been attacked by a dog, and she thinks it's the same dog that frightened Scythe, well, pretty much literally to death. And of course, I wasn't home, so I didn't see any of this. And in order for the authorities to act, there has to be some sort of proof, not just, well, we think it could be this dog. I mean, I think it could be, but I don't know because, as I say, I didn't see anything. Now, under New Zealand law, a dog has to be under the control of its owner at all times, and whether it's in public or even on private land. And generally speaking, in public, that would mean that the dog would have to be on a lead. And I know that the owner of the dog that frightened Scythe did not ever have it on a lead. And obviously the dog that attacked the cat wasn't on a lead either. And so it could be the same dog, I don't know. But it got me to thinking about this whole thing about dogs that attack, because if a dog is proven to attack an animal, it will be put down. And the reason for that is they don't want to take the chance that it's going to attack a child or an elderly person or what have you. We've had a spate of dog attacks in recent weeks, although I suspect that most of them are just ones that the media has chosen to report rather than reflecting any sudden increase in the number of dog attacks, because I just don't think that's the case. But, you know, the thing is that more often than not, dogs are vicious and aggressive because they've been made that way by their owners. And a lot of times I think to myself that rather than put the dog down, they should put the owner down, because the owner is the one who made the dog like that in the first place. Now, there are exceptions. There are some breeds that are just inherently aggressive and vicious, and they're starting to ban a few of those from New Zealand. One of them is a Dog Argentino, or whatever it's called, which is apparently a particularly aggressive breed. But, yeah, it's a difficult one, because as a dog lover myself, I don't want to see a dog put down because of a mistake or something. On the other hand, obviously you can't allow vicious animals of any sort to be roaming around to pose a danger to other pets or to people and whatnot. But I don't know. I think I would rather see the owners that create these vicious animals dealt to a little more strongly, I suppose. But there you have it. So anyway, as I say, we are doing much better. And when I get to the comments section, I'll talk a little bit more about all this, probably, because, you know, so people have left quite a few comments on this. So now I just want to talk briefly, really, about parliamentary systems, because I want to make a radical shift, to be honest with you, and just sort of get things back on track. And as I said earlier, this all came up because of Tony Blair's impending departure, and I thought I would talk just a wee bit about how it all works. Now, there are different kinds of parliamentary systems, but they all have at their core a legislative house that's elected by the people, and the largest party in that house selects a leader who's known as the prime minister or sometimes the premier. So basically, the head of government serves at the pleasure of parliament, or generally speaking, the lower house. Now, there are some variations on this, and what I'm talking about primarily is what's called the Westminster-style parliamentary system. Westminster because that's where the British Houses of Parliament are located. And New Zealand, Canada, Australia, and some other countries have a system that's based on the British system, so it's called Westminster. So when Parliament no longer supports the Prime Minister, they can hold a confidence vote. And basically, Parliament is expressing its confidence or saying that they don't have confidence in the Prime Minister and his or her government. If Parliament does find that there's no confidence in the government, it falls and new elections are held. Generally speaking, that would be the procedure. But in many of the countries, probably most of the Westminster-style countries, this rarely happens. Instead, the Prime Minister resigns, and his or her party selects someone else as their leader, and that person then becomes the new Prime Minister. And that's what happened in Britain, where Tony Blair resigned, and he will be replaced by Gordon Brown, who will become the new Prime Minister. And he'll probably lead the UK's Labour Party into the next election. So what that means in American terms is it's a bit like if the Speaker of the House were president, and which, of course, in this case would be Nancy Pelosi. And here's the real strength of the system. If the Prime Minister falls out of favour with the people, say that by pursuing the wrong policy or what have you, they're very easily replaced. You don't have to wait till the end of the term in order to get rid of them. You just generally what happens is the members of that prime minister's party get together and they vote them out. They get a leadership change and that new person becomes prime minister and things then carry on as they did before. That's not exactly what's happening in Britain, although it's not far from it, because Tony Blair was becoming increasingly unpopular because of his almost unblinking support for George Bush and his Iraq war. So it was probably inevitable that the UK Labour Party would lose the general election if the party in Parliament hadn't done something, and they prevailed upon him to resign and go peacefully rather than being replaced. And very often that's called being rolled. I'm not quite sure why, but I have this vision of the person being rolled out the door. But it's not an uncommon thing in a parliamentary-style system. In New Zealand, prior to 1999, the National Party, was the party of government. And the prime minister when I arrived in New Zealand was a man named Jim Bolger, who went on to become New Zealand ambassador to the U.S. And he was rolled by a woman named Jenny Shipley, who became New Zealand's first female prime minister. But this was between elections. And after the elections, of course, we elected our first female elected prime minister, who is Helen Clark, who's still prime minister. The same thing happens with the party of opposition, too. They can change their leader. The National Party, which is currently the party of opposition, did that as well. They replaced their leader with the current guy whose name is John Key. It just doesn't get quite as much attention when that person is leader of the opposition rather than prime minister, but the effect is the same. Now, the strength of the system, as I say, is that if the head of government becomes unpopular, they're very easily replaced. Some people consider it a weakness that the legislative and the executive are tied up in one branch, essentially. But it's kind of a matter of perception, I think. Because in the American system, the current president insists on being the great decider and essentially telling Congress what to do. And Congress is going along with it by failing to exercise much of anything in the way of oversight over what Bush is doing. So with this growing imperialism in the presidency, as the presidency becomes more imperial, you end up with essentially one strong branch of government and two weaker ones. The Supreme Court now basically backing up the executive, and the legislative also going along with what the executive wants as well. So, you know, since America doesn't have three strong independent branches of government, but one strong one and two weaker ones, it's not necessarily a better way of doing things, particularly because there's no oversight of the president. Now, in a parliamentary system, theoretically, the parliament goes along with what the prime minister wants, but it's not as simple as that because the prime minister is a member of parliament as well and very often has to convince other members of his or her party to go along with what he or she wants to do. But in a country like New Zealand, where coalition governments are the way things are done, the prime minister will also have to convince members of other parties to support the things that he or she wants to do. So there's more of a consultativeness built into a parliamentary system, especially one like New Zealand has, than you will typically find in America. And I think that that's a real strength, because it ends up meaning that the policies that end up being adopted have more broad-based support than you typically find in the case of the American Congress does. I don't know why I'm having so much trouble talking today, but for some reason I keep stumbling over my words. Maybe it's because I'm not quite into this yet, I don't know. Or maybe I'm just out of practice. But I thought I would go on now and go on to comments, if I might. And I want to go way back to episode 10, which was essentially about civil unions. And there were only two comments on that, so this won't take too long. So if you don't remember what that was about, don't worry too much. But Condo Blogger said, "Do you work for the New Zealand Board of Tourism or some kind of specialized super-secret Kiwi government department in charge of getting as many people as possible to move to New Zealand? Honestly, between your podcast and my mom's rave review from her vacation there, I get a little closer to chucking it all in and moving to Middle Earth every day." The tax talk was interesting, though I must admit I zoned out a little. I'm just not numerically or mathematically inclined. Plus, I'm dealing with some tax nonsense of my own right now. So, more was not what I needed. What I didn't hear you say is which system you prefer, U.S. or New Zealand. And I said, "No, you're just seeing the enthusiasm of a convert. I can see how people come here on holiday, fall in love with the place, and decide to move here. I fell under the country's spell sort of accidentally, so I'm still surprised by it all, and maybe just a wee bit more evangelistic about it." Yeah, anyway. You're welcome to move here anytime, by the way. As for taxes, well, I zoned out a bit too when I listened later. To answer your question, there's a lot I prefer about New Zealand's tax structure, its simplicity and transparency, for example. But like everyone in every country, pretty much, I'd like taxes to be lower. But I also like what those taxes buy, so I'm willing to put up with them. And Calvin said, "Every single time you said GST tax, I thought of generation-skipping transfer tax, which is a lovely tax we have here in our lovely fascist state. Not that I have serious problems with the GST tax here, and the GST sounds strange there. I guess I like not having tax included because it helps me realize the amount of tax that I'm paying, sort of a transparency. But it sounds like you have that with your invoices as well. And for not mentioning sex, what a double entendre you left on my site. Congratulations again, and hopefully you will be able to manage all of Nigel's family as well as your own. This picture stuff just won't seem to die, will it? And I said, I prefer knowing if the coins in my pocket will cover the price on the tag, so I like having the tax included. If I really want to know, of course, I can always check the invoice as you noted. I wouldn't have had a double entendre to make if you hadn't put it in the way that demanded it. And to know what I'm talking about, you're really going to have to go and look at Calvin's podcast, because I want you to go look at it anyway. It's at hellowaffles.blogspot.com. He also has a WordPress version, but I can't remember the URL off the top of my head. Sorry. Anyway, I said I may be somewhat reserved about sex, but I'm no prude, thank goodness. Then I said, sigh, no, the picture thing just won't go away. I think I need to wave that little white flag and see if I can't find something to post, or else to get some photos taken. So thanks to both Calvin and Condoblogger for their comments. Now, the thing that's a little bit ironic about that is that was all for episode 10, which I posted on Tuesday the 15th. And I did go looking for photos, actually, and I found some of Scythe and also of our cat, Curzon. And I changed my desktop photo to one of Curzon, and I found one of Scythe that I was going to use next, and then I had this whole sort of series of ones. I was going to change it every week for a while. But then, of course, I didn't get the chance because Scythe died suddenly on Friday, and I just didn't go past that. So anyway, over to the Podomatic site and the comments left there. This is also on episode 10. And Ramble Redhead said, another great show, and wish you and Nigel the very best for your civil union. And like the others, I'm anxious to see pics of the happy couple. I hope that I will have my own ceremony sometime in the future, so we shall see. And actually, oh, thank you, Ramble. Actually, Ramble talked about that a bit on, I think it was his most recent podcast. I don't remember the number off the top of my head. Anyway, but I said, thanks, Ramble. A photo of both of us. I think I may have more success in getting him on my podcast with me. And John Q. Public said, a picture of you both would be great, but surely you will have pictures of the civil union when it occurs, because we gays always love a party, and since I'm an incurable romantic, I love pictures of boys pledging their troth even more. And I actually didn't respond to that, I now notice, but thank you, John. And I probably will post photos from the civil union, actually. I don't have specific plans of what we're going to do yet, so I don't know exactly about the photos, but I mean, it sort of makes sense that if I've gone this far, I might as well put up photos too, I suppose. So, yes, that's still in the planning stages. Now, moving on to episode 11, which was, of course, this past Tuesday. And this was the episode where I talked about Scythe and so on. So here are those comments. Condoblogger said, a very nice eulogy for Scythe. While you talked about the possibility of adopting another dog someday, I started to wonder if there is a pet population problem in New Zealand like there is in the States. Are animal shelters as common here as they seem common there as they seem to be here? As for the Kiwi sweepstakes, the rest of you shouldn't even bother entering. I've already decided that I will be winning. Good luck anyway, though. Now, I actually haven't responded to any of these comments in writing, so I'm going to respond now. thanks, Condo Blogger. And there isn't a pet population problem as such in New Zealand, fortunately. There are shelters. There's the Royal New Zealand Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, although everybody just calls it SPCA. And they provide rehoming for otherwise unwanted pets. But by and large, there isn't a real problem with unwanted pets running around. In some areas, there are problems with cats. And that is especially a problem for native birds, because many of them are ground-dwelling, or largely ground-dwelling, and they make easy prey. But even there, the main threat to native birds and native reptiles as well are things like stoats and ferrets and possums. Now, possums, well, all of those actually were imported into New Zealand in the 19th century as in the hope that they would start a fur trade. And there are no natural enemies for any of those animals, and so they just took off. And possums now are a double threat because they will eat the eggs of kiwi, which are endangered, and they also strip the trees, and endangering native forests. And when they kill a forest, then it destroys habitat for other creatures like kiwi and other native birds and native reptiles and whatnot. And we just can't get rid of the things, which is especially ironic because apparently in parts of Australia, possums are endangered, and they are a major pest here. But anyway, and the kiwi sweepstakes that he's talked about is kiwi shoe polish. If you didn't listen to the Tuesday podcast, kiwi shoe polish is offering a trip to New Zealand for two as part of its 100th birthday anniversary promotion. And although apparently Condo Blogger has already decided he's won the main prize, there are also daily spot prizes or whatever. So you might want to check it out and see if you might win a trip here. Archer said, I hope your bandwidth updates soon. I can understand how you feel about podcasting when you've lost your companion animal. I like that description of a pet. It's so true. I'm thinking about you. My father used to use kiwi shoe polish on his military shoes when I was younger. I remember that stuff. Thank you, Archer. My bandwidth actually did clear. I think it was that night at midnight. It reset back to zero. And so it ended up not being a problem after all. I'm still sorting through my options about what to do about that, and I don't want to get all meta about this, but there are a number of options from paying for better service to some creative means of handling this that have been suggested to me. No decisions have been made yet, and this really probably won't be a serious issue for another month or so when I start to run out of storage space as well. But anyway. Calvin said, I'm still so sad to hear about your experience. I really was touched by your letter. I would imagine that it will certainly take time to adjust. I think they truly are family members. I wish I had read now how to pronounce the name with your five thing, and that would have helped. The whole bandwidth is annoying. I don't know if I can recommend going pro or if you should just move to Libsyn. I would hope that you're able to figure that out easily. Warmest of internet hugs to you. XXO, Calvin. Thank you, Calvin. What Calvin's referring to there is he issued very nice condolences on his most recent podcast. he had stumbled a bit over Sive's name because, unfortunately, it didn't occur to me that I should put a pronunciation guide in before the podcast. I think it was I put it in the show notes. And I really should have said something sooner, but I mean, I wasn't quite in my right mind, so I hope you will all forgive me for that. But it was a really nice and touching thing for Calvin to do, and I certainly appreciate that. And it gets back to this whole thing of what I've been talking about this enormous amount of support that my new friends have been giving, and something I'm certainly very appreciative of. And Nick in Paris said, Hello, Arthur. I would like to send you warm thoughts from over here on the other side of the world. I can well believe losing the company of an animal is similar to losing a close loved one. I wish you and your partner all the best in adapting over the next few weeks. Take care, Nick. Thank you, Nick. And I've gotten a lot of similar comments by email, I should say, as well. John Q. Public said, Best wishes to you both. Everyone I know takes their animal deaths almost as hard as that of a human friend. I do think you ought to consider adopting another pet. Everyone's heart is big enough to accommodate the addition of a new furry one. We've lost two favorite felines and have replaced them with three more. Thank you, John. We are actually considering adopting another dog. We already have a cat, of course. Whether we do or not, I don't know. We'll just wait and see. Because we got Sive when Curzon, I think, was about 6 months old or a little bit older than that. And actually, at the beginning, Curzon the cat was bigger than Sive the puppy was. And they used to wrestle on the floor all the time and tackle each other, and they never stopped doing that. Almost to the day she died, Curzon and Sive would be outside playing with each other, and they would take turns being on their backs with the other one on top of them and all that. It was really quite funny, although we had a barbecue or something at our house once, and they were playing outside, and somebody was really quite concerned that the dog was attacking the cat. We said, no, it's okay. They're just playing. They're fine. And they really got along well. They were best mates. And I don't know if he's quite worked out that she's gone yet, but he's not willing to come in and out of the house because she always used to chase him when he would come in the house. And he hasn't quite adjusted to that yet. So we think for a while we'd like to live just with Curzon and to see how we go, and reevaluate in a few months' time. And we might get another dog, we might not. I don't know at this stage. Tim Carmel said, "I'm so sorry to hear about the loss of Sive. I know exactly how you feel. We lost our last kitty of 18 years in April of last year. And over a year later, the house still feels empty. In many ways, they are like our kids. I liked your description of companion rather than pet. Good to hear you have bandwidth again." Thanks, Tim. Yes, in many ways, they are like kids. I mean, as I said in Tuesday's podcast, we certainly were under no illusions that Sive was anything but a dog, and we knew she was a dog. But that didn't mean that she wasn't important to us or that she wasn't part of our family, because she was. And in some ways, she still is. I mean, she's still in our hearts, even though she's not in our house anymore, after all. And Chef Mark, with Remarkable Palate, and, you know, I haven't said all these people's podcasts. I suppose I should have. Anyway, Chef Mark said, "My condolences to you on your loss. As you know, Steva is a huge part of my life, so I really know how important our companions are. You hit the nail on that. You hit on the nail in the way you expressed that they aren't people, but they are important to us. But like people, they live in as much as you remember them." Thanks, Mark. And actually, Mark was one of my friends on Twitter who left a comment expressing his condolences. And I thought that was touching, because at the time he was actually in Albuquerque. His father just had heart surgery. And, you know, you would have expected him to be a bit distracted by things going on around him, but he still issued his condolences then. And thing about Steva, the first time that I was on Archer's group show, it was actually also the first time I'd ever used Skype. And I had my headset on, and I was being quiet, and then all of a sudden I started talking, and Sive started barking. And Mark was on that show, and he was commenting on how Steva would sometimes do the same thing, and he basically had a business voice that he would use on the phone. If you go back to listen to that show of Archer's, and I don't know the number of that either, you'll hear all that exchange. But it was so true, too, because Sive never barked when I picked up the phone, but there were times when I would talk to the computer, let's say if I started recording a podcast, for instance, where she would suddenly think, oh, something's different, and she'd start barking at that. But thank you, everybody, for your comments. Now I will just switch over to the Podomatic site, where Ramble left a comment and said, "I'm so sorry to hear the loss of your dear pet, especially when it was so sudden. I know from personal experience, since I lost my cat who lived to be 13 and a half years old, that he died from cancer. He was my first one, and there will never be another like him. Keep those wonderful memories that you and Nigel have of her, and know that she was loved by one great couple. I entered the contest and hope I win so I can meet you both." Thank you, Ramble. It'd be great if you could win the contest, but otherwise, you know, you can always save up and come and visit anyway. And sooner or later, we're going to be making a trip back to the U.S. I don't know when that will be. It might be years yet. But it's inevitable. And our main plan has been for quite some time that the next time we fly to the U.S., we're going to fly in by way of San Francisco, partly because we both despise LAX with a passion. At least I do. I hate it with a passion. Nigel probably just merely despises it. I've been to San Francisco once, and Nigel's never been there, and I'd like to show it to him. And of course, we'll spend time in Chicago, where I have family, and probably go out east, possibly back to New York, probably to Washington, D.C., where my friend Jason lives. So there'll be plenty of opportunities that I'll finally get to meet some of you, hopefully, one day. I don't know, as I said, I don't know how many years that may be yet before we come for a visit, but it's something I certainly hope won't be in the too-distant future. But if you do win the QE Shoe Polish competition, or otherwise plan a trip here, that would be great, too. Who knows, we could have some sort of gathering here in the South Pacific, maybe. But thanks, everybody, for your comments. And that is more or less all I wanted to talk about this week. It was a bit of a mixed bag, I recognize that. But there are just a few things I needed to go over before resuming normalcy next week. And the final thing I wanted to talk about before leaving today is that Matt Blender of OK So Radio is going to be participating in an AIDS fundraising event. And I really think it's a great thing, and I would like you to consider offering your support to him. And so I just have a brief message that I'm going to play from him at the end of this podcast, and that will be it until Tuesday. As always, feel free to leave a comment on my blog, amarins.blogspot.com, or you can send an email to amarins@yahoo.com, and I will talk to you again on Tuesday. And thanks again, everybody, for your support. It has been immensely helpful and has really helped us along. Thank you very much, and I'll talk to you Tuesday. Bye, everybody.
Hi, this is Matt Blender from OK So Radio. Right now I'm participating in the AIDS Chicago Marathon Training Program, and I need your help. On my website, oksoradio.libsyn.com, you will find a link to my online donation page. Your generous contributions will go towards AIDS Foundation of Chicago, which is an organization that provides direct medical care to people with HIV. Running the Chicago Marathon will be the hardest physical challenge I've ever faced, but it will be nothing compared to the challenge that those living with HIV and AIDS face every day. This is a great way to help in the fight to end AIDS. Thank you so much for your support.